One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. And happy Friday to you if you're listening on Friday. You can listen whenever you want, my friend. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is. I hope you're having a good one. If not, don't worry about it. They can't all be good, as regularly discussed on this podcast. Thank you very much to all of you who joined the Patreon this week. Maybe I should start reading out names. I'm so grateful to you. Literally every single one of you, you are making it possible for me to continue this podcast, to produce these three episodes a week, and obviously to produce the two bonus episodes that I do every second week for the Patreon. There'll be one of those next week. We'll do the mailbag, and I keep forgetting to tell you to send me your feedback, which is, I need that if I want to do the mailbag episode. The mailbag episode, for anybody who's not familiar, it's a thing I do every 4 weeks where I take your text messages and your voice notes sent into the pod's phone, and then I respond to them. Often people respond to other people's messages. It's a really nice thing. I love hearing from you, and a great community buzz there on the Patreon. But the phone number, if you have thoughts, opinions, suggestions, feedback, anything you want, really, the number is 089-209-6423. That's 089-209-6423. You can send texts, as I said, or ideally voice notes to the WhatsApp there. The number is in the show notes for every episode, but I keep forgetting to say it in the episode. So that's me ticking that box now. I do not have a huge amount of recommendations for you this week, because I've kind of given them to you across the week, and I was mainly reading the Kathy Sweeney book Breakdown, which I'm about to discuss with Kathy Sweeney now in a minute. Now, I regret to inform you that I've once again embarrassed myself by crying during an interview, turning into Drew Barrymore or something. This book got me. As I say, it's called Breakdown. The first line on the back of the book is, "Mothers are not supposed to go on road trips." I found this book to be really confronting and moving, deeply relatable in parts, almost scarily relatable at times, which is a sentiment that lots of people have shared with me in my Instagram DMs as well. It's about motherhood. It's about modern living. It's about getting to a stage in your life and looking around and kind of questioning how you got there in the first place. I loved it, which you will hear in this interview. And unfortunately, yes, at the end of the interview, I do absolutely lose it. So cool for me and good for my professional reputation. Anyway, hopefully you will enjoy this conversation. Kathy Sweeney is a brilliant writer. As I say, I think that all women will connect to this book on some level. I think if you're a mother, you will connect to it even more. Aside from anything else, it's also brilliantly written. Not too long, which is great, because sometimes if you don't have a lot of time, it can feel like you're never going to finish a book, and that will make you kind of demotivated to start. But this is 217 pages. And I think it is perfect. So yeah, highly recommend. If you haven't listened, or if you haven't read it, excuse me, and you think you're going to read it, then maybe you should pause this episode and come back to it after you've read it, because you'll definitely enjoy it more, I think, if you have read it. But you'll enjoy it either way, to be honest, because Kathy's great. And there's lots of kind of universal themes discussed in the conversation and in the book. Anyway, I'm going to stop babbling now. Please enjoy this chat with Kathy Sweeney. Well, Kathy, I suppose a good place to start is to just learn a little bit about you and how you came to writing in the first place.
Okay, Louise, thank you. I studied English at university after school because I just always have done sort of the only thing that I wanted to do. I don't have a huge amount of imagination, and I don't, if I like something, I don't go thinking, what are the other things? I just do that thing. So I studied English, and then again, the same thing, what'll I do? I'll teach English. And that all went really, like, really well. I put a lot of my thoughts and passion and so on into the classroom. In my 30s, kind of just shifts in personal life, I found myself feeling for the first time a compulsion to put things down on paper. And once I started, I mean, I'm not saying instantly, but once I started, it kind of changed me in that I kept writing, and I wanted after that then just to develop the craft, because you have things you want to say, but then you're like reading in a different way, looking at life in a different way, looking at films in a different way. And it just kind of kept going. I think I'm a little bit hyper focused, or you know, the other word for that, obsessional. So I was writing short stories, and for a while they did run alongside each other, sort of teaching during the week and then sort of writing at the weekend. It felt a little bit Jekyll and Hyde. But then a lot of people have that sort of front of stage, backstage life anyway. So yeah, it went along like that. And then when I published the short story collection in sort of I knew I was publishing it from 2019, and I kind of got the sense of the novel. I as teaching went to the side, and now I'm writing full time with a little bit of teaching, but just creative writing, which kind of it's just a kind of a nice pendulum rather than a career.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. And where did the idea for this book come from, do you think? Did it just come to you?
It did just come to me, but I think when things just come to you, you've been storing them for a long time. I mean, I think a lot of the sense of dissonance, like what people are saying and what you're seeing. And I found that sometimes I just didn't know what to do with that. I didn't know what to do with it, because I felt like if I don't do something with it, it might actually, I felt so intense about it at times, I thought it might make me ill. A level of performative speak, even with people you've known for a long time, compared with the obvious reality of the fact that we're all humans and life isn't that easy. And I suppose I started storing it up, like storing up little observations. Like I do remember somebody saying to me, "Oh, I had a terrible day yesterday. I had to do Christmas shopping, and I had to buy something for my husband to give to his mother, and so on." And I just don't know what to say to that. So I write. I don't have much to say. Just write. So it's not all negative. There's a lot of positive as well. And I think in some ways the character in Breakdown is some sort of alter ego that I poured a lot of these observations into. But at the end of the day, I have to find her voice and her story. But yes, I did think to myself, this is a kind of shocker, you know, the idea that the woman goes on the road, goes rogue, and doesn't come back. But I find this very plausible, and maybe I'm just the only one who finds it plausible. But I thought, I find it so plausible that I'm going to write
Yeah,
it.
well, you're definitely not the only one. Like, I think just for anyone who hasn't read the book, I did recommend it last week, so I'm hoping that lots of people who are listening have read it. But it is about a woman who essentially gets up one morning and leaves her lovely house and her husband and her children and walks out the door and kind of doesn't return. That's the abridged version, but there's, you follow her journey along the way. And I find that deeply plausible. And in fact, when I posted about this book on Instagram, a response I got, which I completely related to, is that lots of people were almost a little bit scared by how much they connected to the character in the book and really related. And when I'm reading a book to interview someone, my dad would murder me over this, by the way, because it goes against everything he believes in terms of respecting books. But I fold down the corner of pages so that I will come back to things, just so it doesn't disrupt my reading. But I'll come back to them when I'm prepping for an interview. And like, when I came back to this book, I was like, "There's so many pages folded down that it's actually futile because I can't possibly ask about every line that I've marked." But there was so much of it that connected to me. So you definitely are not the only one who found this to be a plausible whole situation.
Well, I'm absolutely thrilled with that. Like, genuinely, it's not why you write something. You have to feel it and feel that it's something that you believe 100%. Like, I did have to feel this from all the way from the, you know, from the kind of bones out. And I did go very deep to write it into the spaces that weren't always easy to be in. Because it's quite a profound reckoning. And I suppose what I wanted was that the book would read like a report from experience. It's not obvious that she won't turn back. It's not even obvious to her. And I very much wanted to write a woman who, she doesn't know everything at the end. Like, she hasn't had an epiphany. There isn't redemption, because life doesn't feel like that to me. It feels like a struggle where we know things, forget things, know them again, say, my God, how could I have forgotten what I already know? And just kind of keep going. And I think at a couple of points, I wanted it to feel that she, in different, like a little tweak of the dial of circumstance, she might have actually gone back.
Yeah.
But there's no going back by the end. Mm. I just put, I suppose, the 10 years between 40 and 50, which are like pretty, they're all, you know, they're all good years, but that's a, you know, they're pretty banging years in terms of what you're learning about being a woman, what you thought you knew, and so on. And a lot of it I just decided, once I had decided to write it, I am like that. I thought, well, I'm going to go all the way. I'm going to go all the way with this. And there were times I thought, absolutely no one would want to read it. And I had to remind myself that that's not my business. You know, my business is to write it. And what happens after that is, you know, it's not my thing.
That's really interesting. I was just reading about the music producer, Rick Rubin, and one of his big lines, I'm not going to get this right, but is basically that the like listener is the least important person in the creative process, that like you have to try and disconnect from that completely and just make what you want to make. So it sounds like that was your ethos as well.
Oh, it was my ethos. And on a personal level, it's not always easy to enter into the zone where you've been, like, whether it's a cultured or personality or gender, all of these things, you know, to be kind of like nice and likable.
Yeah.
And to just say, there are people who really, you know, might find this extremely unpalatable, but that's not my business. My business is to put out there the as near as you can get it to how you see it in this particular work.
Yeah. And I, you know, you mentioned that there might be some people who will find this unpalatable. And I think that that's true, because it would be quite confronting, I think, for lots of people. You know, the main character is not particularly likable. She is judgmental. She can be difficult at times. She makes choices that lots of people would struggle with. And I think that there will be people who have a certain relationship with motherhood who will find this very difficult to stomach. But I think that there are just as many, if not more, people who will really connect. What I found, well, there were lots of things that struck me about this, but the way that motherhood is portrayed in this book, I think, is really important, because first of all, you very rightly identify the large amount of admin and just shopping that is essential in your role as a mother, which I loved. But also, I think the phrase that you use is the mother whose children are the most important thing in your life. You talk about that kind of concept, which you're not really supposed to say is not your experience, are you?
Well, I think there's so many things you're not supposed to say. At the back of my mind, I took a little bit of courage from, you know, the kind of, I like you, I misquote, so I won't even try, but just generally Oscar Wilde's vision of a work of art. If it doesn't stir up controversy, if there aren't, you know, people who both love it and hate it, then you haven't done your job. I think that sort of just discussion is great. I don't think we should like everything. When I start a class with writers in the Irish Writers' Centre on the short story, I'm bringing in work and I'm saying, please, let's not all like it. You know, let some of us hate it, some of us feel nothing. Some of us love it. And let's chat about that because it's so interesting. And of course, when I wanted to write this book, I really felt strongly about contextualizing a character in the world because that's where we live. And I think sometimes I find with books that I can't see around the character enough. I can't see them actually negotiating the realities of day to day and also the extraordinary level of messaging that kind of keeps you, you know, in a lane as even invisibly that, you know, if you don't interrogate it, you realize that your some of your talk has become like someone else's talk.
Yeah.
And that there's a sense of, you know, picture postcards of what a good life is, what motherhood is and so on. And I was just, I mean, this, like you graze around all the time. And this morning I was reading a review about a book that Nancy Reagan's and Ronald Reagan's daughter has written. And I was just kind of just grazing through it. She doesn't seem to have had a very good time at all. And I'm thinking, wow, because, you know, I was a kind of, you know, young, very young person in that administration. But I remember like the family. And I think that it's like, every generation, we look back to the previous one and we see the hypocrisy and the dissonance of just not being real. And I thought, well, what if we confronted that now, right now, not 25 years ago, but now? There is great love, I think, as I felt it, between the narrator and the children.
Yeah.
But also a sense of having parented very much within the confines of expectations, a lot of which were around almost optimizing children, seeing children as, you know, something you put on the conveyor belt, a baby, and you pick off at 20. And you say, you know, they've got certain accolades that you are a good mother. And I just really feel how much, you know, without saying the big capitalism word, has invaded our skin is inside us as sort of progress models. I thought, well, if you're going to go far, you have to go too far and find out where it is. So I kind of went, well, just put the pedal down on this. And there's motherhood, there's marriage, there's friendship. Like I thought, well, let's not leave anything out, you know, beauty, body, sex, let's get into the whole thing. And I just wanted to see this woman who kind of just wanted to extract herself from a web of ideas about life that aren't necessarily hers. And maybe she hasn't got any much left to say at the end.
Yeah.
But she's just trying to, you know, she's trying to be a person, which is kind of a hard thing to be.
Yeah. And that comes across, you kind of get this feeling that she, like many people, I think, has been performing life according to the kind of paint by numbers expectation that all of us are confronted with, and that I think most people tend to play along with. Like, I don't think it's unusual to find yourself in middle age and to kind of look around and go, did I choose this? Did I want this? Like, I've had these conversations with my friends, you know, what did I take an active role in? Like, what was I thinking? Where was I going? Or was I just on, as you said, a conveyor belt of progress? And it's kind of an uncomfortable thing to be confronted with, but I think it's very powerful. Did it feel powerful when you were writing it?
I thought it wasn't, it wasn't at times easy, like genuinely, because like I'm different people write in different ways. I have to feel it to write it. Like I am a sort of, like if I don't feel it, then there won't be feeling on the page. Sort of bit method. There's a kind of like a profound consideration of those things, especially around like consumerism and the consumerism of parenthood. And how it just accelerated extremely fast. I talked to women a generation up or from me, and they have quite different experiences. Like, I'm not into like better or worse, but I am into like, well, let's put it all on the table and have a look at it. But certainly it did seem to me that every single life event comes with it quite a long shopping list. And that somehow the most terrifying thing is that perhaps we're equating the really good shopping with the really good loving. And that's, that's tough stuff. So yeah, I lived it with the character, and like the hardest thing was to find the voice. And I knew what I wanted to say, but to find the voice that would articulate that. And when I found her, then I just said, right, let's go. Let's go on this road trip. Let's do it.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You mentioned earlier that, as she's going on this journey, you kind of eventually know that she's not going to turn around, but she doesn't. And that comes through time and time again, where she says, she's about to check the timetable for the ferry to go back to Ireland. But then she just finds herself kind of in this onward trajectory that ends up with her starting an entirely new life. And yet we don't see her kind of grappling too much with shame in the context of this. I'm interested to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, I don't think that she does. Well, first of all, I think that she starts out the novel. I mean, what I wanted, and I hope people feel that, is like she's actually like raging.
Yeah.
She's raging. She's not even in touch with it, but she is. And I think she's been quite distanced from her own emotional reality for quite a while. Mm. So it's sort of like coming out in weird bits. The way I've seen that happen with very strange moments in retail outlets, etc. And I think then I don't, like, different writers have different views. I don't see making a character as, kind of jotting down everything, like, this person would make this choice, would wear this color, would, drink this wine, because I don't know myself that well.
Yeah.
And it's a struggle. It's a lifetime struggle to just, like, sometimes you can't believe a decision you made or something you did when everything in you pointed the other way. So I'm very interested in that, in that zone of discovery, of self-discovery. And I think that's an important part of life. I suppose for me, I'm like back to Ovid, and life is change and transformation and development and not becoming static. And I think that this particular moment in this particular economic system prefers static, prefers kind of like, I made this choice, that choice, I'm this kind of person, I do this thing. Because ruptures aren't particularly great for the economy. And I think that in previous times, people often had to take time out, go to a monastery, go stare at a white wall for a few years, or all of those kind of moments when you just need to take a break. But there is a sense now, and you know, I worked in teaching for like 30 years. I mean, I know in my core, like alarm clock goes off, you know, how over the years, the routines become very strong in order to manage, you know, the strain of that. And that's fine. Like jobs have to be done. But I did notice over that period how just the pressures and strains financially, culturally, you know, with issues in society, which are quite numerous to say the least, it becomes more rigid. The slight narrowing of the self that is required in order to just like get from Monday to Friday, in my opinion. And I suppose in some ways, like this book is written as an extreme example of somebody who's facing that down. And one of the things, Louise, that was on my mind or at the back of my mind is we've seen men do this over and over again. Like we've seen films. We just haven't seen the middle-aged woman do it.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, let's see her do it.
Well, yeah, because I mean, the top line on the back of the book is mothers are not supposed to go on road trips. It's a line from the book. And I thought that was really interesting because it's kind of true. Like, you know, I will say in my relationship, neither of us really do that. But during COVID, I got COVID and I went to my parents' house in Wexford because there was nobody there. And I had like 5 or 6 days on my own for the first time since I'd become a parent. Days where I wasn't like away on a work trip or on a holiday or anything specifically. I didn't have anything specific to do except exist and get better and become not contagious anymore. And then I could go back to my family. And I couldn't get over the feeling of not having a schedule, not having, you know, once you become a parent, spontaneity's gone and everything has an end point because at some stage you're going to have to collect the children or you'll have to get up in the morning for the children. So yeah, I can't stay up too late. And, you know, that is in your brain at all times. And I had forgotten what it felt like to not have that. So I think the idea, and I said to my husband, I said, you have to do this. I was like, you've got to come. He still hasn't. But I was like, you've got to come down here on your own and have a few days because it felt so strange, wrong, exciting, free, restorative. It felt amazing, but it felt like I was breaking a rule because there is that idea that you're not supposed to take yourself away from your children unless it's for some vitally important reason. And, you know, as mothers in particular, we feel we have to justify any of that because it's not in the rule book. So it is wild that even just the concept of a woman going on a road trip away from her children, you know, without any real purpose is revolutionary, but it kind of is.
Yeah, I agree. Because it doesn't have a like set destination or parameters. I do know that like I have very good memories of times of, you know, somebody coming around to the house as a kid. And I mean, it's different times, different economic circumstances, completely different world. But as all just like kids playing and nobody calling you in and ending up going to bed at 11 o'clock on a school night and so on. I don't think that exists very much anymore because of different, you know, different stresses and strains or different way of life, the level of organization needed. So I wonder, do mothers now, especially connected at all times to the clock, to the phone, to the message, to the kid, to, I read recently 52% of parents in the UK actually have the app on their phone to see where their children are at all times. Now, I don't have judgment on these things. It's like, this is, that's not my job. My job is to observe it. But I don't think that like my mother, like sitting in the kitchen, you know, chatting with her pal, like over fags, would have really noticed whether it was 3 or 5, you know. So I think that while we think now very much in sort of like on with the kids and maybe escaping the kids, I'm not sure that those lines were as hard for previous generations. Because for so many reasons, it has become just a much more complex in every way role.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think even when you were saying there, talking about your experience of being a kid, I was thinking about my experience of being a kid. And I was thinking about things like, there was a day recently where my children were playing outside and it was during the day. And my husband and I were like, what do we do? Like, we hadn't been alone in the house during the day ever, because my kids are only just old enough to kind of play outside on their own. And I was like, will we watch Great British Bake Off? And he was like, I think we will. And we sat down and we started watching it. We were like, this is amazing, this is revolutionary. But then the kids came in a little while later and said, could they bring their other friend in? And I said, yes, I said, you can. I said, but Dad and I are in the sitting room watching TV. And my son just looked like, couldn't understand what I was saying. And I was like, so you won't be able to be in the sitting room, you'll have to play somewhere else in the house. And he was like, but what? Because we never watch adult TV when they're awake. And it's not even about adult, like, you know, inappropriate content. I mean, we don't watch the TV, we don't watch things that we want to watch, because it's kid time. Whereas when I was a kid, I didn't get a look in on that TV, especially not if there was a sporting event on or whatever. It was whatever my dad wanted to watch. That was what was on all the time. But we don't seem to give ourselves the permission to do that anymore, because there's this pressure of, like, when you're with the children, it has to be quality time and it has to be exactly right. And you have to make memories. And, you know, my friends and I would often say that that's the worst mistake you can make, is decide to make a memory, because everything always goes wrong when you decide that. And then, and the kids probably won't even remember it anyway. But that's a very long-winded way of saying I agree with you. And I think that the pressures that are on us now as mothers are different to the ones that were on previous generations. And, you know, whether it's better or worse, who knows? But I think it is different.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's simply it. The book is not intended as any polemic. Mm. But I just did feel that I want to just go up close with now, not 20 years ago, or, you know, and just look on the inside of something that seems so day to day. That's just something that seems so day to day. And lostness and drift and daydream and all of those places are so, I think, elemental to being human. Mm. And they're definitely being put in the shadow. And one thing for me that I do feel a little bit sad about is when I think kids don't get enough of it. Mm. Sometimes the sense of the parents being busy, like the sound of the sports match coming out of the TV room and someone else, like, just not interested in you. Mm. It's actually a lovely place. It's actually quite nice. Yeah. Well, it was my favorite thing. Mm. My favorite thing was when adults are actually, they don't really care about me now, so I can sneak off.
Yeah.
and hide away, read a book, whatever. So without any sense of time, I suppose time is a huge preoccupation of mine, writing about it, thinking about it, thinking about the human connection to time, which is very, very different through the ages. Mm. And this is the very recent period in human history when it would barely happen ever that you aren't kind of within 15 minutes of the correct time.
Yeah.
So maybe some of that is there, certainly in her experience at the end of the novel.
Oh, I think so.
Also, yeah, I didn't want to, there's no fairy tales here though. Like, there's a lot of suffering. There's, you know, genuine, and it's pretty rough going. And I thought it was only real, the sense that sometimes we do change so much. Mm. That we can't slip back into relationships because the person that was isn't there.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that in this society we accept that as much, that sometimes at 20 you're not the same. Well, maybe we accept at 20, but certainly from like 30 on, you know, we change profoundly. Yeah. And it's part of the spiritual element of that. It's part of what we do. And yeah. I suppose it's trying to make some sort of peace with that. Mm. And also that her reckoning is very powerful, that like she does feel that she failed her daughter.
Yeah.
Even though the daughter is kids, those kids, you know, they're really successful.
Yeah.
the contemporary sort of measurement, which we do with everything, of that, but that in allowing the disconnect to become quite profound.
Yeah, and with her son as well, you know, that he has his moment where he has a hard time at school and, you know, she doesn't respond maybe in the way that she later feels would have been the right way. Yeah, like, I mean, I think that's what's for me really powerful about the book is that so much of her experience of motherhood is relatable. The feeling that sometimes you might feel a little bit trapped, or you might not feel like you're doing it right, or you might feel like the expectations are simply too much, or it's, you know, the kids are being too horrible to you, or you have too many jobs and it can all get on top of you. But then at the end of the book, I started crying reading this. She is talking about seeing two children on a train who kind of become her children in her memory. And she says, I would like to sit with one of them, either side of me, read to them, color in pictures with them, treat them to hot chocolate. I'm going to cry again. Treat them to hot chocolates when the girl comes around with the trolley. I would like to stay on the train with them forever. The reason it gets me is that I think when you're in the thick of it, the weight of parenting can be so intense that sometimes you worry that you're missing it, that you're missing the good bits. And I think that comes across, sorry, I'm losing it now. I knew this was going to happen.
Louise, I'm really touched by the profound just connection there. That was extremely painful to write.
Yeah.
I do think that yeah, I think with a sort of programmed, extremely, like, I'm talking about just a household where there's, you know, everything is on the calendar and, you know, it has to be managed and, you know, can feel like a small second job. But yes, those moments when you're not trying to do anything, you're just there. Because we don't know, like, memories are an extremely complex thing. We've absolutely no way of shaping that.
Yeah.
You know, we have no idea what our children will remember or not remember.
Yeah.
And all we have is I think we do remember the moments when we were, like, actually there.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. And there's quite a painful loss here. And she faces that down. I mean, whether what's, you know, the rights and wrongs and all that, I'm not really interested. I'm just interested in showing. That's my job, seeing and showing. But yes, the sort of that moment when she doesn't want anything from the kid. She doesn't want the kid to, like, be clever or teach them something or turn it into a learning moment. There's no want. There's no sense of that transactional behavior. If you do this and be good, I'll give you this. And there's nothing. The kids want nothing. She wants nothing. They're just
there,
sitting there. And it's a kind of slightly imaginary moment, which is the saddest thing about it. But there are other ones that she remembers. And I think in the car with the son, what I found so upsetting was that when a character roots around your own head for what is the right thing to do rather than just giving the bloody kid a hug and pulling in the car.
Yeah.
And it's hard because moments come at you in parenting. You don't get, like, 3 days notice.
No.
You don't know where it's coming from. And you can be thinking right in that moment, I have that presentation to do tomorrow and, you know, I've got a fucking period and I need to get home. And, and you know, that's the reality of the way it is. And I think the messaging of, like, the right way is actually not always tremendously helpful. And I'm going back to Winnicott there. And if we could be good enough mothers, it would be more than enough.
Yeah. Well, Kathy, I think it's clear that I loved this book. I have recommended it to so many people in my life. I hope that anyone who's listening who hasn't read it yet will pick it up and read it. I think you are a brilliant writer and I can't wait to read more of your work. And I really appreciate you giving me the time to chat about it today.
Louise, I'm honored. I really am. Thank you so much.
There there you go, my friends. Thank you so much for being with me this week. If you've been here for all three episodes, extra doubly special, super duper thanks to you. I really, really appreciate it. I love you. You make my life possible and I would be lost without you. I hope you have a great weekend. If you don't, no worries. They can't all be great. I will be back with you on Monday with the news, catch up with Carl. In the meantime, thank you so much to Acast and thank you to all my brilliant contributors across the week. And I will talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.